When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Come on. Welcome to Lifeblood. This is George G, and the time is right. Welcome today's guest, strong and powerful Gianni Dell'Erta. Gianni, are you ready to do this?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's go. Gianni is passionate about blockchain. He's been working with cryptocurrency since 2013. We had a conversation about NFTs a couple weeks ago, and in that time, I've gone from zero to about 5 miles an hour, not 60. So I'm excited to have you on. Gianni, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, I've been, like you said, in cryptocurrency since 2013. Actually, the first time I learned about it was from a coworker. I used to work at Alienware, and one of the first, 15 employees at the time, and it grew and grew and grew, and life changes, and we go move on and do different things. But I had reconnected with a friend, and he said that he was mining Bitcoin, and this is previous 2013. I thought, I'm a techie, so I thought it was kind of cool, but I couldn't really get involved. It was over my head. And fast forward 2013, November, the Silk Road thing happened, and obviously Bitcoin was a conversation then again. And I was like, I want to learn about this. I did a deep dive. I could not buy it. It was very difficult. There was Mt. Gox. There was just a bunch of different ways of doing this. So I said, if I can't buy it, let me see if I can earn it. So I went on a forum. I did a graphic and put it up there with my Bitcoin address, and somebody sent me $50 worth of crypto and a Bitcoin. And I was like hooked from that point on to see the potential of what it was. And that's not an NFT per se, but it kind of started with this artwork and somebody sending me money. And, it kind of like left it there. The next thing for me was I launched a website called 51 Attack, which was like a crypto only non-fiat business where I sold t-shirts with Bitcoin paraphernalia and other crypto paraphernalia like Dogecoin and whatnot. And I never touched fiat currency at all. So it was all, I found somebody to print my shirts in California and do all those different things. So I was very, enamored with this idea of what was the potential of it. I was able to meet the team of Ethereum because I had t-shirts and they needed some t-shirts to be made.
Nice.
The night before they got announced here in Miami, and somebody called me and said, hey, would you like to go to the Ethereum house? I was like, sure. And so I showed up and became friends with many of them. Moving forward to 2017, I was able to go work with the co-founder of Ethereum, Anthony DiOrio, remotely through a robot of all things. And that's when NFTs happened, right? That's when what they call an EIP, which is kind of like a proposal to Ethereum in order to enact this kind of standard that people can use, was proposed. And the people who made CryptoKitties started that kind of movement. Not to say that that's not the first NFTs, because some happen on Bitcoin, but that was the first one that kind of got a lot of people's attention.
What a long, strange journey it's been.
Yeah, very strange and long, and it continues from there. So,
but super fascinating, right? I mean, I find all of the world of cryptocurrencies and everything you've been working on to be super interesting. And I also feel like it's over my head, and I feel like the vast majority of people do. And now we have this new world of NFT. I just saw yesterday that Tom Brady started an NFT company called Autograph. And I thought, oh my goodness. And Gary Vee's been talking about it. So if you wouldn't mind, Gianni, just kind of give us an overview of what NFTs are.
So I think at this point, a lot of people don't need to understand blockchain per se, right? Because, you know, if I had this conversation with you a couple of years ago, I'd have to, like, what gives it value? How does it work, right? I think even though those are important things to learn, we can kind of skip those things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like seeing a Model T compared to a 1950s Mustang. You know that it works. You don't have to doubt that it's going to run and that it needs gas and all these things, right? But what makes it special? So a fungible token is going to be like a Bitcoin or an Ethereum or any token that runs on a normal blockchain or a smart contract blockchain like Ethereum, which is one of many, right? A dollar is going to be accepted anywhere where a dollar is going to be accepted. It's fungible. The non-fungible is like a one of one, right? It's a trading card. It's a comic book. It's a painting. But even the dollar bill, and I love using this example, the dollar bill itself is both fungible and non-fungible, because at some point that dollar could have an imperfection. Tom Brady could sign that dollar, and now that dollar is not worth a dollar anymore. It could be worth a lot more on face value, but I could still trade it. So it kind of has those same qualities. So non-fungibles in the space of Ethereum and smart contracts, it was a standard, right? The fact that you and I can have a conversation through voice over IP or WebRTC or any of these acronym protocol type things is because Skype and all these other technologies adapted to that protocol, to that standard. And so the ERC-20, which is fungible tokens on smart blockchain, smart contract type systems like Ethereum, and ERC-721 is a standard for non-fungible. So wallets can see it, websites that have galleries and people can buy these things, they can see it, and they're all kind of interoperable. Like an email coming into your inbox would work the same on Gmail as it would work on Outlook. So it's similar to that idea. So basically it's a standard of one of one that can contain images, it can contain text, it can contain any number of things to represent that asset. I don't know if that made sense or if that was all
it
over
does.
The place.
No,
it's a hard thing to explain sometimes.
Yeah, those are fascinating. I guess examples. Just talking about how a dollar bill can be both things, and then thinking about how an email. I'd never really thought about that, right? But I could send an email from Gmail to Yahoo to whatever. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. This episode is brought to you by Money Alignment Academy. If you are looking for a financial wellness platform for your company, your organization, and your employees, check out moneyalignmentacademy.com or click on the link in the notes of the show. All right, so why do you think that they are becoming so popular, or is it inevitable?
That's a great question, and it's an interesting question because obviously in 2017, I thought they were fascinating. I thought this cool doodad of a toy that was made with these crypto kitties, which we can get into later, but it was such a like mind-blowing thing that you could do this type of, make an asset that has a special, unique, scarce quality, and it's one of one, like a baseball card or anything. That I think the technology wasn't there to enable more people to make NFTs or to do these things, right? You have to be a hardcore programmer, an engineer to kind of make sense of it. And so I think over the past 3 or 4 years, you've had people who built interfaces, right? Probably the first email that was sent was done like through a command line on DOS, right? And then we had, you know, things that were built to enable you to write the email and see the email and have all this other features and functionality, but the email is still what it is. It's just an email. It's a protocol that people can interact with. So I think part of that is the technology has grown up. There's been tools that people created to make it easier. But I also think that partly because the people who built CryptoKitties, which was kind of the first smart contract type NFTs that were put out there, they built a blockchain called Flow, which then led to the Top Shots, NBA Top Shots software and collectible cards that launched in October and gave people the opportunity to interact with the blockchain without needing to have special things on the browser in order for them to buy it. So they could buy it with a credit card. They could buy it easily and not have to install certain pieces of software, understand like the addresses and all this really more complicated thing for the average user. They're giving up security. They're giving up sovereignty with their assets by doing this. But the average person probably doesn't know it, doesn't care, but it exposed them to blockchain in a sense. And so October, these collectible cards came out. I think the price of Bitcoin and crypto went up. And so there was a lot of interest again. And whenever you have that, people go really deep and they start, why, what is this? Now it's the third time I hear about it. Let me go find out. Oh, now I can collect some crypto cards. Oh, this is attainable to me. I can play with this. This is something I can understand. So I think they bought it. They started interacting with it. When Top Shots came out, they were doing like $24,000 of daily transactions per day. And then in January, it was like, you know, $1 million per day, you know, and then 2 million and then 6 million. And then they had sold $60 million. I think it's more now. That's the last I checked was a couple weeks ago, like $60 million worth of these crypto collectible cards. And so that all culminated with the people who were already doing artistic NFTs and the platforms where they were able to be bought. And now people have extra crypto. People had stimulus money that they were buying crypto, and this crypto was gaining value. And so I think that's kind of the culmination, the bubbling up of all this excitement, right? So
yeah, fascinating. My brain wants to think about this in terms of like music, and I make an album and I have the masters, the master recordings, but then it's distributed, but somebody can own the masters. Is it kind of like that?
They could, yeah, I think that's a great example using the dollar bill kind of idea, right? Like you can make a digital version of your song and distribute it and copy it and send it to anybody. And they can own that thing, but it's not really the thing, right? Like the master would be, and when I think about it, I think of like old school, like you got the tape deck, yeah. You know, or the big
gold
master,
record.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where that's a one of one, right? That's the master. That's like your hands have been on it, your fingerprints have been on it, and that's the original, right? And so it's similar to that. But in the NFT space, you really, if I, you know, people say it's, oh, you're just buying a JPEG that I can copy. Yes, you can. It's buying a JPEG that you can copy. It's buying an MP3 or a video file that you can copy, but it was generated by an individual from their cryptocurrency wallet, right? And it's a one of one, right? And there's an aspect of ownership. There's an aspect that it originated from you, that it was transferred from you to that other person. And with NFTs, there are some creative things that come with it that imbue the fact that you own it with special abilities, like unlockable content, for example, you know, on Rarible and on OpenSea and some other platforms. If you own the NFT, you can see content that was not accessible before. It could be a coupon to buy, you know, a T-shirt from your music website or a ticket to go to your concert, right? Like they would have access to that little bit of content that only they can see, right? Even if they copied it and did all this other stuff. But the potential is what happens in the future with this technology. I think right now it's just the fact that you can own it and people are excited about it, you know, as well. So,
yeah, no, I think it's super exciting. I guess kind of two things. I imagine we're going to see just a proliferation of these. Is there a challenge with maintaining the network? Is do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes. So just to circle back, one other thing on the music side. So one of the first there was a DJ that put out some NFTs, and I think he raised like $8 million. It was an auction type of thing. And it was a Patreon style thing where you got the NFT and you got other things with it. He would write an album with you. Like it just, you know, it's just kind of like you bought it for me and here's the extra benefits. The Kings of Leon also built out an album that they released. You would go to their website. You would validate that you have the wallet that owns the album, and then you can download the MP3, right? But I could still share the MP3 with somebody else, and at some point, somebody could listen to it on Spotify. But it's just there's a gimmick to it that makes it interesting, right? Going to the question on the network side, yes, it's been detrimental to Ethereum overall. Number one, we have this DeFi activity going on where people are trading and farming and providing liquidity and doing all these things. And the network, there's only so much that it allows for the miners to process, right? And so you have to put what they call gas to kind of pay your fee so that you get the attention of the miners to process your order, process your program, and do that activity, right? The more people are in line, the more costly it becomes, because you want to jump to the front of the line, or you got to get closer to the line, so it makes it faster, right? I could put a transaction right now that costs, you know, at $5, but it may take 3 weeks. Doesn't mean it's not going to be processed, but it'll take 3 weeks potentially, or a couple days for it to get through. So you're going to pay $100. You're going to pay $150 to make it happen in a couple minutes. So the proliferation of the NFT activity, the DeFi activity, has put a big damper specifically on Ethereum at this point. There are things that are going to happen towards the summertime where they're going to do a hard fork and an upgrade and all new kind of technologies that will allow Ethereum to be cheaper in gas and all that stuff. But there are many what they call layer two chains, like Polygon, which was called Matic before but not called Polygon. There's a thing called XDAI, where it's very cheap, inexpensive, and fast for you to mint NFTs and do other DeFi type activities. So a lot of these things are being solved, but it's just a matter of time before it becomes easier, cheaper, and whatnot. So,
yeah, interesting. And do you think that this is just going to be a little bit of a speed bump, and that this is going to become mass utilized, accepted?
I think NFTs are just starting. I think the future use cases are phenomenal. I like to tell people that, you know, where they're, oh, these NFTs have such value and they're scarce. And I think having that extra costly gas makes it difficult for, and it makes it even more a barrier. So some people can get in and they have this FOMO that I wanted too, but you got to consider, I always like to use this example. What happens when Photoshop or Facebook or Instagram says, when you save your photo, would you like to save it as an NFT, right? And that means that everybody will be able to own NFTs and produce NFTs. So they're not that scarce anymore, right? But the key factor is, at that point, what would the world of tech look like? Will the browsers have the function to know that you have, you know, George, you have the permission to own my NFT and display it on your website? The browser will know that I gave you that permission, as an example, let's say. Two other examples that I'll give you that are just mind-blowing, you know, identity, titles of houses, titles of property can be represented as a NFT, right? And can be transferred and moved around and all that, you know, very interesting things. And just recently, there are some, you know, they call lawyer engineers that have basically enabled people to potentially spin up a business on a Delaware business on the blockchain. And all the governing documents, all the operating agreement is stored in an immutable NFT, right? And visible to everybody. So like those are very creative ways that people are using it, but I think there's a lot more opportunity than people are even aware of that will be, that, and the NFTs won't be just for art. They will adapt into new ways that we haven't even figured out yet. So,
yeah, super exciting. Super exciting. I love it. Well, Gianni, the people are ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
I think the difference-making tip on the blockchain side is that I think people, you may feel FOMO, like you're missing out on something big, but we're just at the tip of it. I think we're, it's been around, you know, like I said, I've been at it since 2013, but there are so many opportunities, especially for young people. From, you know, going into law and thinking about what the implications of blockchain is in society. Government is going to be affected by it, you know, from voting to property, to all these different things that we're talking about. And creative people, creators, people like you, people that may have new ways into either monetize their activities, but the tooling needs to be made, so the opportunity is there. And the participation is just starting. So I think people are still early. And so I just get, you know, that's the tip that I would give anybody, that to get involved, see what's happening, and just know that there's still so much opportunity in the space that they're not missing out. It's just getting started.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets, come on.
Come on.
Yeah. I think, you know, just start peeling back the layers of the onion and the whole industries and just so much, which is just getting started. So I think that's well said. Well, Gianni, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can people engage with you?
I'm pretty much everywhere. I don't try to do the pseudonymous crypto style thing. I like to be kind of out there and make sure that people know who I am. So if they want to find me, they can visit my website, Gianni Dallerta, GiannidaLerta. Sorry, my name is a little complicated, but it's my name. And that same conjugation can be found on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else with that Gianni Dallerta, you know, formation of words and letters.
Perfect. I love it. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Gianni your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to GianniDallerta.com. That's GiannidaLerta.com. And then put all those letters together on your favorite social media deal and you will find him as well. Thanks again, Gianni.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, guys.
You too. And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.